Guys of a Certain Age is brought to you by no one. Absolutely no one. Except these dudes walking down memory lane. Now let's head to the studio to see what they misremember next.
It's the show that's more unpredictable than February in Mississippi. It's Robbie Koblenz, Guys of a Certain Age in studio alongside
Jay Reed.
And no, Art Shirley. How was that for an Art Shirley impersonation?
Okay, well, I didn't realize you were Shirley. About to imitate him, but that's
Art?
Not too bad.
No, it is. It is what it is. So, how are you doing
Art
today,
Jay?
Art is
really the imitator.
He really is. He's a chameleon is what he is. You know, he could be, I don't know what he could be. He could be a Skrull.
A Skrull?
Maybe, he's a Skrull.
Maybe that's what he is.
Art is a Skrull.
We're going to figure that out one day. He's just going to pop up and transform.
Or you could just get a little bit of his DNA and we could test it. Send it to 23andMe.
There's probably a hair on that chair we could pull out. Somewhere.
Oh, there's probably a hair.
There's a hair on my chair, and how did it get there?
Okay. Is that actually a song?
There's a tear in my beer is what I was
going
for.
Oh, that's where you're going for.
I didn't know the rest of the song, so I didn't know how to carry it out with those.
All right.
I'm going to work on that.
You work on that. I think that could be nothing.
It could be exactly what it was.
Absolutely,
already.
Positively nothing. So
as it should be.
You know what I realized? I didn't realize, but I realized it. You have never met George A. Biden in person.
Have I not?
George says he has never met you.
That's possible. I think we've spoken when we have interviewed him remotely.
That's right. He doesn't believe that you exist. He thinks you're an AI construct. I said, take the I out and you might be there, but
I'm not sure what that means.
Artificial intelligence, take the intelligence out.
Oh, the I, what the I represents. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Artificial.
Artificial. He's an artificial construct. So, but yeah, I saw he and his wife, Callista, they came into the wine room on
that,
Saturday
yeah.
night. And, he's like, I've never met Jay. So for someone who's been on the podcast, who
Art kind of keeps him to himself when George comes.
He really does.
Yeah. I'm not sure George exists, really.
Maybe he was a holographic construct.
It could be the same thing.
You never know. He's a pigment of Art's imagination, a pigment.
You're getting your people confused.
My
there.
People confused. What was it? You claim Mark is your TV son. I claimed Art as my TV brother.
Right.
So that was pretty funny. So, all right, let's jump into Geeks of the Week.
All right.
Once you go first, I'll do mine, then we'll do Jay's regrettable segment.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Not nearly as good as Art, though.
I am going to tell you about another new movie that I didn't know was coming, but that I'm actually excited about. Now, again, excited enough to go to the theater? We'll see. But it's called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Have you seen the trailer or heard of this one?
Yeah, I may have heard of it, but that's going to be the end of... I'm going to look
it
up.
Well, it's just another one of Henry Cavill's... I mean, he seems to be in everything this month. And this is coming out in April, and he is one of the major stars. I'm not sure he has top billing, but certainly in the top. Alan Ritchson is also in it, which got my attention because he's the current Jack Reacher, where I'm almost finished with season two of Jack Reacher.
Directed by Guy Ritchie.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and Carrie Elwes is one of the main characters, a lady named Elsa Gonzalez, who I'm not as familiar with, but she's been in several things. And then I'm going to butcher this name, Babs Olusanmakun.
Yeah, Dr.
Mabinga from Strange New Worlds.
That's right.
Yeah, so great cast, and Henry Cavill is sort of the feature star of most of the trailer, and he just acts like a kind of a goofball, but it's got a lot of action. It is based on a true story from World War II.
Ian Fleming
is also in the movie. Yes, I didn't know the character.
Freddie Fox playing Ian Fleming.
Right, right. So that should be fun, too, as a James Bond fan. So it's just kind of it's definitely a shoot 'em up. It takes place in World War II. It's one of these deals where they form a team to do things that the government can't do officially, and something about getting rid of some German U-boats. At least that's what the trailer implied. So April 19th coming out. And looks fun.
It looks a lot of fun. Absolutely. That
and I like that it's based on a true story, but it seems to be kind of a funny take on what happened as well. It may be very serious when you watch it. Who knows?
Interesting. Yeah, I'm like you. I don't know that I will go to a theater, but I would definitely spend some time watching that. So,
And by the way, speaking of things that are coming to the theater, I believe this week or next week, Dune Part Two. Right.
Yeah.
Dr. Mbinga was in Dune, and I don't think I connected those dots.
Yes, he was.
So another tie-in.
He also died in Part One.
But he's listed in he must be a flashback.
It's probably a flashback.
Because Part Two, he is listed as part of the cast.
Because Paul Atreides kills him, assumes his household duties, and his coffee service.
Okay.
So you have...
today as we record, this is Leap Day as we record, and a quick look, as I was looking at this earlier, I saw that this is the last day you can watch Dune Part One on Netflix. I don't know if that means it's going somewhere else or if it's on Max.
I believe it's still on Max.
Still on Max. Yeah. So, yeah, because I was going to try to... I don't know if I'm going to rewatch it before I see two or not. Now that you've said that, I'm curious.
So I need to check with the oldest son when he wants to go, and then we can make plans. I'm really looking forward to Dune Part Two. The reviews have been glowing.
Okay.
Like it's the sci-fi epic for the modern generation or something like that. Mm. That looks to be kind of fun.
Sounds exciting. So anyway, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Well, this wasn't my geek, but we're filling a little bit of time since we don't have Art to co-opt the conversation. Speaking of Henry Cavill, there is a rumor that he is going to join the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we have talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast, but the speculation is he might become Scott Summers' Cyclops of the X-Men.
So, really?
So there's been some fan mock artwork of him as Cyclops. Looks great. He's kind of got the look of Cyclops from the comic books. Anyway, so that would be
like an older version.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Huh.
So, I will probably have to go watch Deadpool and Wolverine in the theater because it's supposed to retcon a lot of the Fox Marvel stuff to tie in with the MCU. So
I saw that trailer this morning.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds is already a little bit full of himself. I mean, he basically says, I am the Marvel Jesus.
I saw that.
You know, sorry, Mrs. Reed and everybody else listening. But basically, yeah, it's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, I didn't realize until I watched the trailer. I knew Wolverine was in it, but it kind of looked like it was part of the title.
Yeah, it's now Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was Deadpool 3, now it's Deadpool and Wolverine. Okay. So if you go back and look at Hugh Jackman's social media, he nixes out Deadpool and puts a little bit of profanity and Wolverine, so it's pretty funny. I can't wait to see the chemistry with those two guys. But that was not my geek, but that's something that's popped up. So who knows what's going to happen? And that may be under wraps until Deadpool and Wolverine actually drops, and you pull a lot of things in there. But my geek would be something that you might be interested in, even though you haven't read or watched The Expanse on Prime as much as I've beseeched you and Art to watch. So there is a Kickstarter that is launching tomorrow, March 1, as we record, that they're going to make officially licensed action figures of the Expanse cast. And it looks really, really cool. So the prototypes look really good. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight figures, some you can buy solo, stretch campaigns that are going to give you a variety of things. But, these are, 10-inch, 8.5-inch? I can't remember. They're pretty detailed.
Who's doing them?
It's Nacelle is the name of the company doing it, and it's officially licensed from Alcorn or Alcon or whoever, okay, who was the producer of the show.
Okay.
So those are the rights holders for the show, but it looks pretty awesome. So I'm looking forward. I don't know that I'll jump in on the Kickstarter. I love The Expanse. I don't know that I love it that much that I want action figures. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's one of these things, and you've done a few Kickstarters, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the ecosystem that has come up around crowdsourcing. Mm-hmm. I mean, several artists that I followed as a teenager in the Christian rock space, that's how they finance all their new music. They're either doing Patreon subscriptions or they'll do a Kickstarter. One of my favorite bands of all time is The Call, which was fairly popular in the 80s. They crossed over into alternative. One of Peter Gabriel's favorite bands of all times. They actually toured with Gabriel. And the lead singer, Michael Bean, died 10 years ago. They found, as the rest of the band was cleaning out archives, they found some unfinished songs that had Michael Bean singing. So the band came in and re-recorded everything else, and they cleaned it up. And they did a Kickstarter, which generated close to $70,000. Mm-hmm. So things like that are really exciting. That's the best use for Kickstarter out there. We should probably do a show, your favorite Kickstarter campaigns.
Okay. Maybe we should do a Kickstarter campaign.
Nobody's going to give us any
money.
We
could give, you know, stickers or things away. Or
yeah, nobody's going to give us
any money. Live broadcast from your home.
Yeah. Or maybe people would pay us not to do that. So, but anyway, if you're listening and you're a fan of The Expanse, go to Kickstarter, look for The Expanse action figure campaign, and should be active as you listen, if you're listening, actually. So it could be a lot of fun. But when I saw that, I thought of you, Jay, because it's got collectible, it's got action, it's Kickstarter, it's everything that you love.
Cool. Well, I haven't watched The Expanse, so that's probably not a Kickstarter I'll jump in on, but I did find an app this week that will help me. It's I think it's called Collectibles or something like that, and you can go through and put in all of your collections and kind of catalog them. And there's even, if there's a barcode, it might recognize the barcode, so you could scan it in. So
this cost you X amount when you bought it, and it's only worth 20 cents.
That's what I fear.
Yeah.
What I fear. No, but for me, it would be something, I guess this should be next week's Geek of the Week. But for me, like when I go to card shops or whatever, you know, randomly every now and then I'll see figures or cards or whatever. I would love to have something at my fingertips that tells me, hey, dude, you already have this. Don't spend the dollar on this extra Jerry Rice card because you have three of them at home already. That kind of thing.
I used to be able to remember like what CDs I owned at the drop of a hat, you know, and I don't know how many times I picked up, you know, in closeout bins or something. Oh, this is great. I don't know that I have this, and I've got like five of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably have had that happen quite a bit through the years.
Yeah, for sure. For sure with cards, because I'll buy a lot, and there'll be, you know, a dozen in there, and I'll think, well, I know I've got this one, but I probably don't have the other 10. Yeah. So, you know, I'll have some extras, and I'm not sure I'm going to take the time to go through all, you know, 700 or 800 cards to catalog them. But figurines, like there's some McFarlane figurine that I'm certain I don't have because it's a, you know, collectible variant of whatever.
Yeah.
And but that's what I'm not sure of, so I don't want to buy, you know, something like that would be a little bit more expensive that I've already got. So, anywho.
All right, let's go into the next segment of the show. As Jay continues to take over guys of a certain age, it's time for Jay's regrettable segment. I don't do that nearly as well as him. That was actually kind of sad.
He's got like an echo in his voice.
He does. That and the throat bongos. So, you know.
Right.
I mean, you can't beat any of that. So.
Well, this one I fear will be short. There's really not much to tell. The name of this regrettable superhero is The Eye. And it's not a metaphorical eye that's like a person who can see really good. It is an eye that floats in the sky, and it does have some power. And I'll back up. It's 1939 from Frank Thomas and Keen Detective Funnies. He has some power. He, she, it, I don't know, has some powers. Did I just get us an explicit rating? Sorry. It can fly. It can melt steel. It can appear and vanish at will, but in order to get things done, it relies on humans. It basically just instructs humans. In the comic sort of clip here in the book, it says it's giving instructions to some people to do whatever, I guess, he sees needs to be done. So there's not a lot of excitement there. It did later become not just The Eye, but Detective Eye, which sounds even goofier. Made about 12 appearances and then disappeared. There is no origin story. There is no disappearance story that I'm aware of. So that is all.
Wow.
Really is all about the eye. That, and I think we can, I could probably guess that this is regrettable.
That would be very regrettable. Sure. Can you hold it up? Let me see what the eye looks like.
It's just an eye.
Wow.
There's nothing exciting.
In this case, the eyes do not have it.
The eyes do not. That's a very good way.
Yeah, there you go.
Closing that out.
So. That looks pretty sad.
So. Yeah, I think that, I mean, when you consider, I mean, one of the things I consider when we ask regrettable or not regrettable is how it would play out in a TV movie or serial, you know, series today. And I just don't see it. Don't see it at all.
You don't see it.
See it. I know. At all. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. He had vision for that one. All right. That's going to wrap it for the Artless segment. Well, I think the second segment is Artless as well. But Jay's got something he wants to do as he continues to take over the podcast up next. And we're back on a cold day, the last day in February, and it's leap year day.
It is leap day, whatever you call it.
Yeah. What would you call that?
I think leap day is, yeah. Or sometimes people just say February 29th.
So is this our first February 29th in the podcast, or is this our second?
It's our second time to pass through it. I don't know that we recorded on February 29th the first time around.
I don't think we did, but I think the podcast existed.
It did exist, because it's been, didn't we say we're in our fifth year, so 4 years ago would have had to have been.
Yeah, but we have a hard time telling time, much less, you know.
Timely-wimely.
Yeah, time. Yeah, exactly.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, something like that. So, all right, you had an idea.
Yeah, I have an idea. I think it would be good.
Yet again, he's taking over the show.
I'm sort of an advocate, quite interested in something that writer Jeff Goins calls the portfolio life. Basically what that means is we have, as human beings, as entrepreneurs or whatever you want to call it, there are different aspects of our lives that sometimes overlap, sometimes don't, but we're not just one thing. And I think you, Robbie, embody that as much as anybody I know, because you had just so many things going on. So I thought it'd be fun, and maybe we can do this with art later and see what happens. We'll start with the baby of the guys. Robbie is the youngest of the guys of a certain age.
Okay.
Only in that regard, the youngest. And just kind of get to know us as individuals, because I think what we hear here is all the geek stuff. Now, we do talk about our personal lives and things like that to some degree, but pretty much we're focused on the geekdom. So I think it would be, I just thought it'd be fun to explore some of those other areas, and let me just do a little quick interview.
All right, we'll see how this goes. I do control the edit button and the stop record button.
He does, and that's part of it. That's just very briefly, not stop me if I'm wrong.
And that does it for this episode. Go ahead.
Robbie's afraid. Robbie's very shy. I don't know if anybody knew that. He's actually quite shy. Doesn't like to talk. We really have to pull it out of his ears.
So. Yeah, just keep moving.
So you grew up in Meridian, Mississippi, and then came to Starkville to go to Mississippi State. Pretty much never left. Is that really accurate?
Yeah. So transferred from Meridian Community College in 91, graduated from high school in 88. And if you're doing the math, that means, yes, a three-year community college career. But what happened my sophomore year, at the beginning of my sophomore year at MCC, I got hired as the video producer on staff, which was great, at MCC. Right. So probably the greatest perk, other than a paycheck, was the fact that I had a staff parking sticker.
All right. That is valuable on any campus.
Had a staff parking sticker and had a office. I mean, I had an edit bay / office in the media center. And so I had a place to go between class. And then obviously, you know, stayed to work the rest of the time. Yeah. I think I worked like 30 hours a week or something like that. So
crazy.
But that was a lot of fun.
All right. So then you came up here. What actually, I'm not sure I knew what your degree was in at State.
So I was a double major in chemical and electrical engineering for the longest. And I went into a chemical E double with my third year at Meridian Community College because I was able to take organic 1 and 2 in labs. Moved up here.
Bless your heart. You know, organic about killed me.
Well, I tell you, the labs are what about killed me, because I didn't have the patience for them, because there was a lot of dishwashing in in organic labs. I remember I had my chemistry teacher there told me that, of course, this is a different era. This was back in the late 80s, early 90s. He said when he got married, he told his wife he was never going to wash a dish at home ever because he spent his entire life washing dishes in the lab. So,
okay.
Understand. Yeah, again, a different era. But I transferred up. I narrowed it down to electrical engineering, did that for the longest.
I did it for a semester, so you made it farther than me.
Well, and so what happened with me is the broadcasting bug bit me fairly early. When I was a sophomore, the summer between my freshman and sophomore year in Meridian, high school, mm-hmm. yeah, in Meridian, a AM station converted to a Christian rock, well, contemporary Christian mm-hmm. station. And
CCM.
So, what? Yeah, that's right. So WFEZ, then it became WMER at the top of the 3-foot building. And so ended up working radio. And that's when the idea of broadcasting and media production, I kind of got that bug, which led to the job at Meridian Community College. But I was doing all kinds of interesting things in high school. My junior year in high school, that would have been 86 to 87. It would have been the fall of 86 to spring of 87. We did, in honors English, we did music videos to poems. And so there were like four or five of our groups in that high school class. And I ended up with a group that we did E.E. Cummings, Pity This Busy Monster, Man Unkind Not. And I think I was like the editor, the teacher assigned jobs. I ended up doing the whole darn thing mm-hmm. because I was just fascinated with it. So anyway, long story short, the production bug bit me then, got into doing a little bit of radio. And so flash forward to when I moved here to Starkville in the late summer of 91, I got a job at the TV center on campus and then got a job at WKOR doing weekends here mm-hmm. and realized that I didn't want to be a chemical engineering major. And so went down to electrical engineering with the idea of being valuable at a TV or radio station. Not only could I do production, but I could do the engineering side.
Okay.
Then it got to a point where it's like, I just want to be done. And I went back and literally looked through the catalog and said, okay, these are the classes I've taken. What can get me to a bachelor's degree quicker? Because in the interim there in 92, I was hired as the media director at First Methodist and was the general manager of WO5BV, Channel 5, Starkville Channel 5. I did that for 6 years. And so literally looked to see what can I get to a degree. And I ended up as a general liberal arts major because I had a ton of math. Right. So in those days, a GLA major, you had three emphasis areas. And then you had to write a essay saying this is why I want this degree with these emphasis areas. So I had a ton of math. So because I'd gone through differential equations too, I believe, and whatnot. So math, English, because I'd taken a bunch of creative writing classes.
You didn't ever have my father though in
math. No. Math, English, and then I got accepted into the computer animation curriculum at the Engineering Research Center here. And so my GLA degree was math, engineering, computer animation. There was not an advertising degree here at Mississippi State at the time at all. And there's really not now. There's a marketing degree, then you've got a comm degree. And I think there's a little bit of crossover now, but that's one of the things I talk to anybody who would listen. It's like, none, you're putting these people in silos. Uh-huh. You know, you should have crossover because production folks need content to produce. Marketing folks need to know the ins and outs of shooting a commercial or recording a, broadcast, what have you. Mm-hmm. And so ended up getting a GLA degree from state, graduated in May of 98, graduated from high school in May of 88. So I call it my decade of excellence. So, and shout out to my wife, Bonnie, because I got to a point where I had to infill with some pretty basic classes and I ended up doing a correspondence class. This was before any online curriculum, correspondence class for, it's like an American government or something like that. And I made B's and C's on the test, Bonnie wrote my essays for me, and she made high A's. So I think the statute of limitations has passed by now. So, but anyway, yeah.
Okay, so then graduated with a degree that gave you a lot of different background for what you do now.
Now, graduated with a degree that absolutely doesn't impact anything I do whatsoever.
So the engineering stuff, you don't, I mean...
You know, so I do all my systems engineering work, so I didn't end up with an engineering degree. I ended up with a general liberal arts degree. Right. So, yeah, the electrical engineering stuff did help me from a system standpoint because I do all my internal systems here at Broadcast Media. Networking, video, the whole nine yards, anything that involves taking a signal, whether it's video, audio, digital, analog, data from one machine to the other, I built those, that infrastructure. So yes, in that regard, that helped. But as far as just a GLA degree, I
meant the actual classes, that kind of stuff that you put together, found some use.
Yeah, but also realized this was at the beginning of the personal computer age, and, you know, Ethernet didn't exist back then, you know, stuff like that. Wi-Fi, what is Wi-Fi? We don't even know. What's an IP? I mean, a IP address did exist, but you didn't know what that was. That wasn't in everyday parlance, so...
All right, so then you moved from the Methodist Church studio. When did Broadcast Media become a thing?
So when I was on staff at First Methodist, we really kind of expanded our production footprint there, and because I wanted to do more things. And I tell you, one of the things I was most proud of, we joined First Methodist, or Channel 5, joined the Mississippi Association of Broadcasters, which is a trade group of radio and TV stations in the state. And one year, a spot that we produced won the top commercial production award in the state. And that's going against all the TV stations in the state.
Oh, wow.
And so that was one of the things that kind of put me on the map. It's like, ooh, wow, won an MAB gold. So I was trying to push what we were doing at Channel 5. We added a local football. We did a bunch of local production. We had a local sports show we did. We had a country music video show we produced. We had a Christian music video show, which was mine, which I brought to, and it left with me. So we did a lot more production. The cable system at the time, Northland Cable, was looking to downsize. And in the early 90s, every cable system in America had a guy who went out and shot and edited TV commercials. I mean, that was part of the local sales piece. And Northland actually came to Channel 5 and said, hey, would you guys be interested in taking this, you know, subcontracting this work? The TV committee, which governed the operation of Channel 5, I took the idea to them. They're like, no, we're not comfortable with the wear and tear on equipment. So what I ended up doing was buying some equipment, some cheap equipment, and did some of that freelance after hours, edited on weekends or at nights, that type of thing. And so started Broadcast Media kind of as a freelance thing in that 96, 97 realm. When I left Channel 5 in 98, went full-time with Broadcast Media at that point. And it was, man, I think I paid myself $1,000 a month when I left. So, you know, kind of crazy.
All right. So then that's been going on ever since. It has grown, and it is, I know I've seen it evolve just a little bit as I have known you. One of the things, let me think back time wise. I was trying to figure out, because one of the elements of your sort of portfolio life is the, you're involved in a lot of different businesses right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we met basically through a food connection, and if correct me if I've misplaced the date, but I think we met at a grill, basically. Wes Shelton, a frequent listener and guest here, was doing a thing that he does out at the baseball field. And you were out there with your camera. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure Wes introduced us out there.
That sounds about right.
Like the very first time we met. And then that from there, our paths continued to cross. And then we got to the Greater Starkville Development Partnership deal where I was doing write-ups for the restaurant week. And they decided your son Mark was in the sort of in the heyday of his Master Chef junior days. And so they said, well, let's, I think you were already involved in something. They wanted to do videos. I'm like, let's bring Mark in.
Yeah.
Let's tie this together. Because I look back, it was 2017 when we did those Starkville Culinary Town videos together. It doesn't seem, it seemed like it should be longer ago, but that was the date on the YouTube video.
Was it not 16?
We may have done them in 16 and then just put them up on YouTube as a series later.
Yeah, that may be what we've done. Yeah, because I think you're right. But yeah, that was, I vaguely remember, Wes would, they would compete for Super Bulldog Weekend grilling.
Yeah, that was it.
They would do pulled pork, brisket, whatnot.
Because I was involved in the Cotton District Festival, which was the same weekend at the time. But Wes had got me out there because we had done some projects together otherwise. And anyway, so that's where, that was kind of the impetus of that.
Yeah. And then, like you said, with Mark, with Master Chef, the partnership at the time was real supportive of what Mark was doing because he was kind of a minor celebrity at that point. Mm-hmm. And, we leveraged that TV piece. And then you had a following with your food column.
Right.
And so you guys, that was a lot of fun. I mean, those pieces were
I still love to go back and watch those videos. Yeah, myself. I cringe at some of the things I said, but
it would be fascinating to see you two do something together like that, because you've got almost 300 episodes of a podcast mm-hmm. under your belt. You've done a lot more stuff in front of a mic or on a camera
since then.
And Mark's grown up, and so you both have a lot more experience, so that would be a lot of fun to do.
I'm on it. I'm ready. But I was curious though, Mark did had the food interest, which you helped him with the videos and stuff to get him on these shows. I know that, but right now you've had your hand, you started off, you opened a bakery. That did well. You sold it to the chef. Then you moved on to a gelato shop, which then later, what's still in existence, Dolce, which, am I saying it right today?
Yeah.
Cause I know it's today evolved.
Yeah.
And then Dolce moved, and also you've got Luba the Wine Bar. So do you think Mark's food interest in his foray into that world sort of brought you into it to want to do these other things, or what got you to these kind of businesses?
So I've always liked to eat, and that's pretty obvious if you've ever met me. So before Mark and David was ever born, I pitched a food TV show to Food Network.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Before I wanted to do basically go to SEC towns and check out their food and tailgating scene.
Okay.
Never went anywhere. Cause this would have been 97, 98 Food Network. Didn't take unsolicited pitches. You had to know somebody. So prior to Mark and David, I, pitched a food TV show.
Okay.
And I've always been interested in owning a restaurant because I thought it'd be fun. So all that to say this, Mark watched a lot of Food Network growing up. And I watched several. I mean, I was a big Guy Fieri fan. Yeah. I was a Alton Brown fan. I watched Good Eats almost every night. Became interested in owning a restaurant. In fact, the building we're sitting in one time, I mean, right now, the building we're in right now, one time I thought about putting in a coffee shop at the south end of the building where we're sitting right now. But the too far removed from the center of town, and the traffic wouldn't have been able to generate. So have always had that interest. When we had an availability to buy the old Dorigo's, bread location, mm-hmm. well, not the location, but the assets of, I mean, it just was too good to be true. And so that kind of started that culinary journey. I love coming up with ideas and setting up businesses, and the creation of a business is one of the most creative things you could do, because not only you're coming up with the collateral, like logo and look and feel and brand colors, but you're coming up with the formation of what the business is, what's the model, mm-hmm. what are you serving? And that's startup is real exciting for me.
Yeah. And that's one of the fascinating things I've found just watching you do this, as I've known you over the past, 7, 8, 9 years, is you're not just coming up with the logo and the design, because Luva and Dolce both. I mean, even Proof. But Proof is kind of there as Dorego's before, so it has some similar vibes, and just the building itself creates a vibe. But it's been neat to see how you have built the other places. Because like when Dolce first opened, it was in the old Rex Theater building.
Yes.
And the theme, you know, had all these little cameras in there and the movie poster advertisements and all that. Just a super great tie-in. The new one is a different vibe, different location. But, I mean, in Luva's a completely different vibe from any, and I'm overusing the word vibe, but from other similar type places in town. But not only have you come up with all that, but you've done a lot of the construction yourself. I know you practically built a cabin, all kinds of things. So you've got, that's kind of what I was getting as the portfolio life, is you've got some really interesting set of skills. Now I realize you're not doing everything. You're calling people in to help with certain things, but
I mean, I don't do plumbing or
shit. You did a lot of that. And I don't know, I don't want to run too long on time, but, one of the things that prompted me to want to have this conversation was this past week. And we've mentioned this, I think, last week that it was going to happen. But going to the library and watching your documentary One Night in March, I've seen it before. And I remember enjoying it then. But when I watched it this week, I thought, this is just really well done.
Well, thank you.
And you need to do more of these kinds of things. Well, Kickstarter, maybe. We'll get a Kickstarter for more documentaries.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just not something that everybody knows about.
Yeah.
And they should. I mean, you've gotten some recognition through the, what's the name of the other movie that, about the Loyola side of it.
Loyola Project.
Loyola Project and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was a fascinating conversation to hear the coaches and players talk about it. But anyway, I just thought that's something that...
Well, it's interesting because we're kind of 10 years past the heyday of One Night March, and it's the gift that keeps on giving. So when we re-released the 50th anniversary edition, which is what you saw in 2013, it ended up getting picked up by American Public Television. And the way the PBS, American Public System, works is there's not a network per se, like, you know, there are ABC affiliates and Fox affiliates. Each PBS station or each public broadcasting station in the country is kind of independent. No, kind of. They are independent. And they have a couple different programming sources. PBS being one of the programming sources. That's where you're going to get Nova and Masterpiece Theater and things like that. I think Masterpiece is from PBS. Anyway, American Public Television is another source. They do a little bit more syndication stuff. And so working with Mississippi Public Broadcasting as the sponsoring station, we were able to present One Night in March to APT, American Public Television, one of their markets. And it got picked up by 140-ish PBS stations nationwide. So it was fairly widely distributed, widely seen. And it stayed in circulation till this day. I mean, we're in 2024. That was 2013 when it dropped. A week, in 6 days as we record this, the public television station in Topeka, Kansas is going to air on a Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, One Night March, as part of their fundraising for their fundraising spring fundraising cycle. In fact, I sent them 8 copies of DVDs that they're going to offer as a gift to for your support of public television in Topeka, Kansas. So all that to say, you know, man, folks are watching it 10 years later. Every time it never fails, at this time of year, I'm going to get an email or a phone call from someone who has just watched One Night in March. I had somebody call from St. Louis one year. Somebody reached out from San Diego, I think it was, or L.A. So that's been really, really cool. So it, like I said, we're 10 years kind of past the heyday of it, and it's still out there. But like I told you, in our text message, I needed a benefactor, you know, so I won't say exactly what I said, but, you know, sorry, Mrs. Reed, but
we'll work on that. Well, let's,
we're at 23 minutes.
In my vast, experience with interviews on this podcast, which I think this is the second one, I like to do a little lightning round at the end.
Oh, no.
So we're just going to, I'm going to list 2 things and you're going to choose one. There's no explanation required. And there's no right or wrong answer. And if there's any repercussions from your answers, well, that's on your own.
Well, plus I can edit it out. So.
Right. That's true. Right. Yeah, so a lot of times this is about food. I do have some food questions, but there are some other non-foods as well.
Well, let's start with that.
All right. So two words you choose, Marvel or DC?
Oh, Marvel.
Tom Baker, David Tennant.
Oh, Tom Baker.
Kirk or Picard?
Picard.
Oh, okay. Luke or Han?
Luke.
Okay.
Are you surprised by any of these?
Not really. No. Okay. Not really. All right. Okay, now the fun part. Tacos or pizza?
Pizza every day. Maybe my favorite meal of all time is pizza.
All right. Biscuit or cornbread?
Biscuit.
That was fast.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a big cornbread fan.
Ribs or brisket?
Brisket.
Okay.
Well-cooked brisket. I should put it that way. If it's not well-cooked, it's dog food. So, yeah. Let's put a star there.
Cheese or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Okay.
Which Marvin, my cousin who's listening, would probably say cheese because that's kind of a covalence thing. But, yeah, chocolate.
And the final one is ice cream or cake?
Ice cream. Because you can't make a malt with cake.
Okay. All right. And you really didn't. The only thing I figured most of those, I wasn't sure about Kirk or Picard.
Yeah,
you got me on that one.
I've only seen a half a dozen of the original Star Treks.
Okay. So that surprised me a little bit. And I wasn't.
The production
Luke
value.
Or Han, I wouldn't. Who knows?
Yeah, the production value of the original Star Treks.
That makes sense.
Says the guy who loves Tom Baker, you know.
I figured Tom Baker, but I knew you're a big Tennant fan as well. So
I like Tennant, but Tom Baker. I mean,
I have heard you say Tom Baker is my doctor.
Oh,
is
absolutely. I have the scarf and everything.
That's so awesome. All right. Well, like I said, Robbie's really shy, and I'm sorry we couldn't get him to talk more on
this.
Did
I pass? Was this a pass or fail?
This was you passed.
Yeah, we'll see what Mrs. Reed says.
Yeah, that's right. Well, she'll have an opinion.
Sure. Yeah, probably so. All right. Cool. Is that the last
that's
of the
it.
Interrogation?
Thank you for your participation.
Woo. I can't wait till you do this to Art.
Get to know the guys. Yeah. Series 1.
There you go. All right. Thanks, guys, for joining us. We'll see you next time around.